One of the most interesting couples in the Pali Canon is King Brisenade and one of his queens, Malika. Malika is the one who introduces him to the Buddha, convinces him that the Buddha is actually wise. And there's that famous scene between the two of them where they're alone in the royal apartments. And in a tender moment, he turns to her and he says, "Is there anyone you love more than yourself?" You know what he's expecting. He wants her to say, "Yes, Your Majesty, I love you more than I love myself." And if this were a Hollywood movie, that's probably what she'd say. But this is the Pali Canon. You don't get away with nonsense in the Pali Canon. She says, "No, there's nobody I love more than myself. And how about you? Is there anybody you love more than yourself?" The king has to admit that no, that's not the case. That's the end of that scene. So he goes down and he sees the Buddha. And the Buddha tells him that she's right. You could search the whole world over and you'd never find anybody you love more than yourself. At the same time, everybody else loves themselves just as much, just as fiercely. And the conclusion he draws from that is never harm anyone or get them to do harm. In other words, don't make your happiness depend on harming other people, because it's not going to last. And if you get them to do harm, then that becomes their bad karma. And that's a really bad way of harming them. So it shows that if you want happiness that's true, happiness that lasts, you have to have compassion. So the king learned a lot of lessons because of Malika. Then one day he's sitting in conversation with the Buddha, and one of his courtiers comes up and whispers in his ear that Malika has died. And he just starts drooping. He can't say anything. He's at a loss for words. His shoulders are drooping. And the Buddha says to him, "Have you ever known a case where there's something that was born that doesn't die? Look the whole world over. No matter what the level of being, wherever there's breath, there's going to be death." Now the purpose of this is not to be impersonal, to say, "Well, it's going to happen anyhow, so forget about it." He doesn't say that at all. But it does help to expand the king's mind, realizing he's not the only one that the universe is dumping on, and it's all the time. There's another case where another one of his students who lived in the same city, Lady Wisaka, she was a grandmother. She had lots of grandchildren. She loved her grandchildren, but one day one of her grandchildren died. And so on her way back from the funeral, she stops off to see the Buddha. And he finds out where she's been. He asks her, "Would you like to have as many grandchildren as there are people in Sawati?" And at first her reply is, "Well, yes, lots and lots of grandchildren." He says, "But then every day you'd be coming back from a funeral. Just think of all the people in Sawati, given that large number of people. There's a death every day, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four." And she says, "Okay, enough of having that many grandchildren." You realize that death is everywhere, which means that people who are suffering from separation are everywhere as well. The purpose of this is to open your mind, to replace some of the grief with compassion, realizing that lots of other people are going through the same thing you're going through right now. That lifts your heart, makes you more responsive to the fact that everybody's suffering. There's that famous story, it's in the commentaries, where a woman has lost her baby child. The baby child has died. But she won't admit that it's dead. She just says, "Sleeping." And so someone tells her, the Buddha's really good at giving medicine for cases like this. So she goes to see the Buddha. And the Buddha says, "Well, to cure this, you have to find a mustard seed. The mustard seeds are very easy to find. They're the cheapest thing in India. He says, ask for mustard seed, but it has to be from a house where there has not been a death. So she goes around the city and asks for mustard seed, and everybody's happy to give her one. But then she says, oh, wait a minute, has anybody died in this family? So yes, my grandparents have died, my children have died. My brother and sister have died, my parents have died. She realizes that death is a normal part of life. So she finally admits that, yes, the child is dead. It's by expanding your mind, expanding your heart to the sufferings of other people that lifts you, at least to some extent, out of your grief. But there's still the particulars of the grief. And the Buddha says, as long as you find that it's useful to give eulogies, to think about the good things that the person has died, go ahead and do that. Make merit, listen to the Dharma, dedicate the merit to the person who's passed away. But there will come a point when you realize you're getting self-indulgent, and you realize that in spite of that loss, life is still worth living, and there's still lots of good things you can do in life. Then you move on. That's one level of dealing with grief. The other level is when you think about all those beings who've died. And however, wherever you go in the universe, not just in the human realm or the animal realm, but in the lower realms, the upper realms, everybody dies. No matter where you could be reborn, you'd be facing death again. And in the meantime, you'd be facing aging, illness, separation. And thinking about that, it's not just you, it's everybody. It gives rise to a desire to follow the path that maybe the Buddha was right, with all this death all around us, and all the death facing us. Finding something deathless would be really worthwhile. That's the only place where there's safety. So in this case, what you have to do as a result is to follow the path. Both because you can take the merit that comes from following the path and dedicate to people who passed away, and because it is the way out. The Buddha doesn't deny that there are pleasures in life. He said, if it weren't for the pleasures, we wouldn't hold on to life. We wouldn't hold on to things. We wouldn't be attached. We wouldn't be passionate for things. But at the same time, they have their negative side as well. And you focus on the positive side, you just keep coming back, coming back, coming back. But there's always a sense of dissatisfaction in coming back. There's never enough. There's another story about a king, a monk, Ratabala, has ordained. He came from a wealthy family. His health was good. He was still young. And one day he goes to take a rest in the king's pleasure garden. The king finds out about this, and he's curious. Because as far as he's concerned, people ordain either because they have bad health, they've lost their family, they've lost their wealth, they're old, decrepit. But here's someone who's not like that at all, who ordained. So he's curious, why? So he goes to the monk Ratabala in his pleasure garden and asks Ratabala, why did you ordain? Ratabala says, because I heard four teachings from the Buddha, four Dhamma summaries. They gave rise to a sense of faith and conviction. We've chanted these passages sometimes. The first one is, the world is swept away, it does not endure. Second one, the world offers no shelter. There's no one in charge. Third, the world has nothing of its own. One has to pass on, leaving everything behind. And the fourth, the world is insufficient, insatiable, a slave to craving. The king doesn't understand. So Ratabala explains. First one, the world is swept away. He says, when you were young, were you strong? The king says, yes, I was strong. I knew nobody else who was strong as I was. How about now? Oh, now I'm 80 years old. I mean to put my foot in one place and go someplace else. The Brahma Dharma says that's what it means. The world is swept away. It does not endure. It's a teaching on aging, and it's also a teaching on inconstancy. The world keeps changing on you. The world offers no shelter. There's no one in charge. What does that mean? Especially as a king, he likes to think that he's in charge. Bharatabala asks him, do you have a recurring illness? The king does. Shooting pains go through his body. And sometimes as he's lying there ill, the courtiers are gathered around thinking, maybe he's going to die this time. Think about that. The people who are your servants looking after you, they're thinking, maybe finally he's going to die. Bharatabala says, can you order them to share that pain out so you don't have to feel so much? Well, no, I can't. I have to feel it all by myself. That's what it means. The world offers no shelter. There's no one in charge. That's a teaching on illness. And it's also a teaching on suffering. Third one, the world has nothing of its own. Here the king says, I have storehouses filled with gold and silver. What do you mean, I have nothing of my own? Radhabala says, can you take that with you when you die? He says, oh no, I have to leave it behind and go wherever my karma takes me. Teaching on death and not self. So we have aging, illness, and death. And the three perceptions of inconstancy, stress, and not self. How about that last one, the slave to craving? The king doesn't like to be called a slave. But Ratabal asks him, suppose someone were to come from the east, someone you trust, and says there's a kingdom that you could conquer, lots of wealth, weak army, would you go for it? And here he is, the king has been reflecting on aging, illness, and death. He's 80 years old. But he says, sure, I'd go for it. How about a kingdom from the south? Yes. West? Yes. North? Yes. How about the other side of the ocean? Well, yes. Randabal says, that's what it means, a slave to craving. We live in this world full of aging, illness, and death, separation. And yet we keep coming back for more. The question is, how much longer do you want to keep coming back? They reflect that wherever you might go, there's going to be more aging, illness, and death. The mind inclines to something that doesn't die, has no aging, no illness, no separation. That's what we're aiming for as we meditate. There is a dimension that you can touch in the mind that doesn't die. But it's obscured by all of our fabrications, all the things we create to fill up the present moment, to create the present moment, keep it going. Fearing that if we don't keep it going, everything's going to fall apart and there'll be nothing. But the Buddha is saying, you let go of these things. You learn how to master the processes of fabrication, how you breathe, how you talk to yourself, the perceptions and feelings you focus on. As you master this, you can take the processes apart. And what's discovered as you take them apart is something that doesn't die. The path we follow doesn't create it. If it created it, it wouldn't be deathless. It wouldn't be unconditioned. But it is unconditioned. But the path we follow takes us there. That's why the Buddha used the image of the path. So this path we're on goes to a good place, better than you can imagine. Where there's no more aging, no more illness, no more death, no more separation. There's not simply a lack of these things. There's something extremely positive. It's where there's no more hunger because there's no sense of lack. All your desires for happiness are fulfilled there. So in this world of separation and loss, there's still hope. requires our efforts, and our dedication, and our conviction. But it more than repays whatever goes into it. The path takes time, but it's time well spent. Again, more than well spent. So let those thoughts encourage you.